The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is the art of being well.
What's up, and welcome to the art of being well. I am a leading functional medicine doctor. We get to consult people around the world via webcam. And I'm a New York Times bestselling author. If you want to learn more about our clinical work, the Telehealth Center, we have brand new telehealth patient options now open. I'm so excited about the launch of a few different ways that we're there for people. And lots of free resources there for you as well, like tons of resources for you to reclaim your health for completely for free. You can check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you know, every single episode, pretty much, we're giving away free healthy stuff. We're giving away free telehealth consultations. We're giving away free supplement protocol stacks that we have at drwillcole.com. We're giving away free signed books for you to win, for a chance to win. You can choose one of those things. All you have to do for that chance is head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well there. Tell us what you love about the pod. And you can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review itself, or take a screenshot of your review and message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole. And every single month, my team and I will be going through the messages on Instagram as well as the Apple Podcast reviews themselves. I read every single one. Honestly, thank you for the thoughtful, kind reviews that you leave there. Anyways, we'll randomly pick winners every month, and then I'll reach out to you and we'll ask what you want, and we'll either send out product or book that you want, or set you up with the telehealth consult, whatever you choose. Good luck. About every single month, we have entire episodes devoted to a deep dive. If you're interested in health, wellness, nutrition, all of that stuff, a functional medicine approach on very specific topics. You can get an insider's look, a behind the scenes look of our approach with our telehealth patients around the world. So, today's topic is all about mental health. And, you know, this is Mental Health Awareness Month, but even if you listen, every month should be Mental Health Awareness Month. So it doesn't matter when you listen to this episode. And that's certainly our work. And that's why we call these episodes Mental Health is Physical Health. And we've talked about different autoimmune problems, gut problems, environmental toxicity, nutrient deficiencies, like really niche things. But today's topic is literally about the topic of mental health, and how a central part of our perspective on mental health issues is the fact that mental health is not separate from physical health. Mental health is physical health. Our brain is a part of our body just as much as anything else. So you're going to get a view of this, maybe some controversial topics that we hear, that I see whenever I post about these, about mental health on social media, and get my view on all of this stuff. So to help me out, every Mental Health is Physical Health episode, we have somebody represented from the telehealth clinic here, representing the mental health and physical health side of our work with the clinic. To represent the physical health side, we have our lead functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, Andrea.
Hello.
And to represent the mental emotional side of things, we have our lead emotional wellness coach, Candace.
Hey, everybody.
And you know and love us, hopefully. You at least know us. Maybe you're indifferent or don't like us, but why would you listen to the podcast, right? Anyways, let's jump into it. I don't know what question she's going to ask me, but our chief functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, Andrea, is going to ask me some questions about anxiety, depression, mental health, brain health. And then Candace is going to give us some mental emotional tools. I don't even know what she has planned, but you're going to get so much good stuff out of this episode. Share it with friends, anybody that's interested in mental health from a functional medicine perspective, or maybe learning something that they've never learned before. But let's jump into it.
I love it. And
let's just acknowledge right off the bat that this topic tends to have some controversy around it. For us to pretend it doesn't, it would not make any sense. So my first question for you, Dr. Cole, why do you think there's so much controversy surrounding mental health when it comes especially to treatment, and yet alone even talking about it too?
I think I can read some researchers in this space because they postulate what could be. I think that there's a lot of shame around mental health. So when you have shame and stigma around a topic, you can have visceral responses for somebody that's going through that and it's already feeling shame. So you have this sort of rebound response. Plus, beyond the person on a micro level that's going through it, and people that feel shamed, and there is a lot of stigma around the topic, they can lash out and feel offended. Plus, if they're not feeling well, hurt people hurt people.
People absolutely. That
are triggered and more dysregulated or more apt to act in a dysregulated way. And that's what kind of what we're talking about. So you kind of expect the response with the topic in the population that we're talking about. And I think there's a lot of orthodoxy and a lot of money behind the ingrained orthodoxy as well, where it's almost like, it's not a perfect analogy, but I would say that in our modern world, it is a modern secular version of what humans have always done. Only before it was the church and it was the orthodoxy of religion, where you'd be accused of witchcraft anytime you'd go against the orthodoxy. Or if you said the earth was round and everyone believed it was flat, or the earth was the center of the universe, you would be called a charlatan and a witch and a heretic for bringing these things up. I feel like we're pushing, when you're talking about topics like this, it's just so steeply ingrained in orthodoxy. It is just one of many examples where there's not a diversity of thought. A diversity of thought is really not allowed. And it's done, there's a lot of effort to silence diversity of thought in this topic. And there's many other topics with healthcare and other spheres outside of healthcare where there's freedom of thought is scary in this area.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we experience this firsthand quite frequently. And especially, I mean, you just had a post where you gave clinical data. There's an actual study associated with it and you got backlash. Do you want to speak about that at all?
Yeah, many studies. It was not too long ago where I talked about, and it's not a new thing that I've talked about, but it was the response in the comment section was different. So I don't know if it was something to do with the algorithm or the timing or what people were fed this with the algorithm. I don't know. Maybe there was some difference there because I've been talking about this for 13 years. This is not anything new. But there is new research further showing this point. So it was really centered around antidepressants, SSRIs specifically, this class of medications that most people, when you talk about antidepressants, that's what they're talking about. The post was, I'll read it to you guys. Tell me your hot take on this.
I'm going to tell you. I have a lot of thoughts.
Okay. It was meant to get people's attention, but it wasn't meant to be offensive. It was meant to spark curiosity to want to read the research and agree or disagree with the research. But it said, for the majority of people with depression and anxiety, antidepressants work no better than taking a placebo. In other words, they can work if you believe they do. So I get it. Slightly controversial. But then I went and showed the research in the scientific literature of showing
that. Yes, because that wasn't your opinion.
No.
That was a study.
Just what the science is pointing to. So let's look at both sides of this and look at the best data around antidepressants and then look at what reviews, meta-analysis of the data. Let's break it down for everybody. And then we'll give you tools of like what our approach is. Well, first of all, we're not anti-antidepressants. Let me be clear. I am pro-choice when it comes to people making health choices for themselves.
Yes.
And I'm also pro-informed consent, which is what the post is also really about in part two. How can you have informed consent when you don't look at all the research instead of just cherry-pick data to prove a point? Or not talking about the research at all and just saying, take this because I have a white coat. Or take this, this is your only option. I want you to have agency over your health. So that's really what this conversation, even on this podcast, what I wanted to be, is pro-informed consent. We're going to try to show both sides, and then you can make the decision for yourself. Again, diversity of thought without being monolithic and silence or canceling people for having differing views. So the best in the research for antidepressants, SSRIs, for depression, was 30% versus 19% in placebo. So the best in traditional psychiatry, the best in traditional mental health, conventional medical treatment with SRIs was then 11%. So it said 11% advantage over placebo. That was the best. Then you've had different studies that looked at all the research, meta-analyses, reviews, and what's the total context of this versus just one study that showed, oh, that's the best. So let's go with that number, which is still not huge, 11%. It's not nothing, but it's just 11% over placebo. So this is a review in Evidence-Based Mental Health, the medical journal. Over 50% of depressed people failed to reach full remission of their symptoms after taking antidepressants. And for one third of people, remission continued to elude them, meaning they did not get remission of symptoms, after four courses of medication. This review found that except for people with severe depressive disorder, antidepressants work no better than placebos. We'll link all of the references in the medical literature, scientific journals, in the show notes. So go to drwillcole.com, go to podcasts. I'll reference all of this for all of you nerds. Just don't take my word for it. This is just me relaying what's in the journals. So that's what my post was about, showing that one meta-analysis review. There's a newer one. It was titled Placebo Effect in the Treatment of Depression and Anxiety. This is in the journal Frontiers in Psychiatry. These are not fringe woo-woo opinions. These are in the only journals that are within medicine. This is what the authors of that review showed. Analyses of the published and unpublished clinical trial data are consistent in showing that most, if not all, of the benefits of antidepressants in the treatment of depression and anxiety are due to the placebo response. And the difference in improvement between drug and placebo is not clinically meaningful and may be due to breaking the blind by both patients and clinicians. Although this conclusion has been the subject of intense controversy, the current article indicates that the data from all of the published meta-analyses report the same results. This is just this past year's in 2023, I believe. So then this all brings about is what's the mechanism of action? You have these meta-analyses showing that it's about the same as placebo. One study I mentioned showed 11% advantage over placebo, but when you look at all the data, it's about the same as placebo. And that was what my post was about. I wasn't saying there's anything wrong with placebo. Let's look at the medicine of placebo, mind over matter. What is suggestion? What does the power of thought have on our biochemistry? I think that's a powerful tool. And then are there ways to tap into that mind over matter without the potential negative side effects of the medications, which we know these medications have side effects, low sex drive, it can cause other symptoms, even suicidal ideations in some people. So there's rare risks, like low statistically small percentage of risks, and then more common side effects of these medications. And we should be aware of these from an informed consent standpoint. And then what are some other options? Don't just drink whatever, drink better. With Hum, you can enjoy a low sugar kombucha that's so freaking delicious. They also have zero sugar kombucha that I love. It's so good. The first Whole30 approved kombuchas or these amazing probiotic seltzers and probiotic sodas. So many things to choose from. These beverages from Hum are packed with 2 billion live probiotics to support a healthy immune system and optimal gut health. Plus, it's loaded with vitamin B12 to give a great boost of energy for your day. Hum beverages are absurdly tasty. They're flavor forward, they're easy to drink, and come in a variety of delicious flavors. I recommend getting their variety pack because you can try all these different flavors out. They come in flavors like dragon fruit, which is so good. The blueberry mint is very refreshing, delicious. The raspberry lemonade is a favorite at our house as well. Blood orange, so good, blood orange. And the peach tea, try them all because we're all gonna have our favorites. It's honestly hard for me to choose because I've loved all of these for a long time now. Visit humkombucha.com, use code DrWillCole for 15% off your total order. That's humkombucha.com, use code DrWillCole for 15% off your total order. Find Hum on Amazon for free shipping with Amazon Prime and delivery to anywhere in the United States. Let's face it, life can be stressful, it can be overwhelming, and it's not just your mind that suffers when you're feeling tense and anxious. Stress can also make a mess of your digestion and your immune system too. But here's the thing, your life doesn't have to be a constant downpour. Introducing Just Calm, the breakthrough new stress-soothing formula from Just Thrive, a company that I've loved for years. Say goodbye to frazzled nerves and hello to a steady, serene, more relaxed you. Just Calm's proprietary mood-lifting blend is clinically proven to help you relax and breathe a little easier in as little as 4 weeks. And for next-level mood TLC, I love the Just Thrive probiotic and combining the two. The Spore probiotic, the Just Thrive probiotic, banishes bloat and constipation so your gut can produce more serotonin, your happy neurotransmitter. Plus, it supports better sleep so you can wake up feeling refreshed and revitalized. With Just Calm and the Just Thrive probiotic, you'll have the ultimate stress-fighting duo to help you win the day every day. Right now, when you go to justthrivehealth.com, use promo code Dr. Will, that's D-R-W-I-L-L. You can get 20% off a 90-day bottle of the Just Thrive probiotic and Just Calm. That's like getting a month completely for free. And a portion of every purchase goes to Vitamin Angels, a nonprofit organization that saves the lives of millions of children and moms-to-be around the world by ensuring they get the vitamins and the minerals they need to stay healthy and strong. To learn more about this groundbreaking company, don't miss my episodes with Tina Anderson, who's the founder of Just Thrive. She's been on the show a few times, and I learn something new every time she's on the show. Take control today with Just Thrive. I know that I'm going on a long diatribe.
No, you're good.
But I want to talk about this. Well, maybe you'll ask me. I want to talk about the serotonin connection and the mechanism of action of these medications, but I'll kick it back to you and maybe we can cover that.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to ask about. Like, what is the research surrounding the antidepressants, the mechanism of action, and how do they actually work? And then as we continue this conversation, I want to talk about the functional medicine approach and those mechanisms. So we have the drug mechanism, but then we also have the functional medicine approach that can also work to healing the parts of the body that are inhibited in the first place. So I want to hear about it. Tell us about it.
All right. So the theory around how the antidepressants were working, that 11% in study, largely it seems to be the same as placebo. So how is it helping that small percentage of people? And certainly, to be clear, there were some studies that showed that other than people with severe depressive disorder seems to be the one population of people that do get some benefits from antidepressants. So how do they? How do they? Well, it doesn't seem to be its effect on serotonin, which is our happy neurotransmitter. 95% is made in the gut, which we'll connect it to the vagus nerve in a minute. But this was a groundbreaking, comprehensive review of all major strands of research. This is out of the Molecular Psychiatry Journal in 2023. It was titled The Serotonin Theory of Depression, a Systematic Umbrella Review of the Evidence. This is long, but I want to read it. This is the conclusions of the study. Our comprehensive review of the major strands of research on serotonin shows there is no convincing evidence that depression is associated with or caused by lower serotonin concentrations or activity. Most studies found no evidence of reduced serotonin activity in people with depression compared to people without. And methods to reduce serotonin availability using tryptophan depletion do not consistently lower mood in volunteers. The chemical imbalance theory of depression is still put forward by professionals, and their serotonin theory in particular has formed the basis of a considerable research effort over the last few decades. The general public widely believes that depression has been convincingly demonstrated to be the result of serotonin or other chemical abnormalities, and this belief shapes how people understand their moods, leading to a pessimistic outlook on the outcome of depression and negative expectancies about the possibility of self-regulation of mood. The idea that depression is the result of a chemical imbalance also influences decisions about whether to take or continue antidepressant medication and may discourage people from discontinuing treatment, potentially leading to lifelong dependence on these drugs. This review suggests that a huge research effort based on the serotonin hypothesis has not produced convincing evidence of a biochemical basis to depression. This is consistent with research on many other biological markers. We suggest it is time to acknowledge that the serotonin theory of depression is not empirically substantiated, end quote. That just says everything, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, and it really so does. I would ask you then, what are the causes?
Well, I think it's first of all is our view of what this even is.
Yes.
Is it even a disorder or is it a sign that something's going on? Is it a sign that the body needs some care? And you can look at a field of research called the cytokine model of cognitive function, which we talk a lot about in the podcast. Cytokines are pro-inflammatory cells. It's research looking at how does inflammation impact how our brain works? Neuroinflammation. And I think that's where a lot of the research is pointing to is these inflammatory components and then what causes the inflammation. And that's what the show is all about. The physiological, i.e. physical drivers of inflammation and mental, emotional, spiritual drivers of inflammation. Because what is inflammation? It is a product of the immune system, but we're talking about a dysregulated inflammatory response, a normal thing that's dysregulated, chronic inflammation. What's dysregulating inflammation? It's these things that we talk about on the show, physical and mental, emotional, spiritual drivers of dysregulation of the neuroimmunoendocrine axis, the nervous system, the immune system, i.e. inflammation, and the endocrine system, our hormones. So we have to first see is depression, anxiety is, in my mind, from a functional medicine perspective, as a check engine light. What's causing the check engine light to be on? It's going to be different from person to person. So it's unfair and overly reductive for me to say, this is what's causing it. Because that check engine light's on for different reasons for different people. So it could be low thyroid hormones are associated with anxiety and depression, sorry. Increased spikes of thyroid hormones is increased anxiety. So you could have dysregulation of thyroid hormones. You could have estrogen progesterone imbalances. You could have underlying gut problems, which that's your second brain, which can impact the production of these neurotransmitters that works upon GI motility, which works upon the vagus nerve, which is that largest part of our parasympathetic nervous system, our resting, digesting, poor vagal tone is a lot of our work with patients. So you have to look at the gut-brain hormonal axis to understand it. And the pieces of the puzzle are going to differ from person to person. So inflammation can be the commonality, but what's causing the inflammation is bio-individual. So that's the short answer. Which it's still not everything, right? It still has to be looked at on an individual basis.
Yeah.
So that would be my thoughts there.
I feel like functional medicine, and yes, I'm biased. This is my job and I see it help people every day. But I feel like there are a lot of advantages to functional medicine when it's coming to a mental health standpoint. And one of those things is figuring out root causes and why someone might be going through what they're going through. So are there any particular labs that you would lean into when having someone come to us with those higher levels of depression and anxiety?
Yeah. Well, I think when you look at the inflammatory component of it, you want to look at inflammation and being implicated, at least as a component of why they feel the way that they do. And it's something that they can measure and see improve and see if they can correlate that with improvement of their symptoms. But the problem is there's not going to be one biomarker that's like, this is the depression biomarker.
No, I know.
Yeah. So that's the whole point of this is that you want to look at in concert, the synergy, the total confluence of variables that give rise to that check engine light being on in the first place. Whether that be anxiety, depression, or brain fog, or fatigue, we can kind of open up this conversation to beyond just anxiety and depression. Just you being the best version, feeling the best version of yourself. So comprehensive metabolic panel comes to mind, like looking at glucose, A1C, looking at your metabolic health, because we know that doubles the risk of anxiety and depression. And 93% of the United States is having a massive metabolic issue. That's gasoline on the fire to your mental health. It's not to say that's the causation, but it's certainly an exacerbation of your mental health. And so looking at glucose, blood sugar balance, and optimizing that, looking at inflammation markers like high sensitivity C-reactive protein, looking at homocysteine, which we know increases blood-brain barrier permeability, it acts as a neurotoxin, and we want the optimal zone for the homocysteine marker, this inflammatory marker, to be under 7 in functional medicine. A lot of people that have psychiatric diagnoses, they have different methylation gene variants, mm-hmm. So looking at methylation genetics and giving support in appropriate ways would be something to consider. We want to look at the gut health. We know that's your second brain. So getting a good thorough view from a diagnostic standpoint of your gut health, Leaky gut syndrome is associated with anxiety and depression, so assessing that. Looking at bacterial imbalances, which we know certain colonies of bacteria are associated with anxiety and depression. So all of these, are all of these causal, or are they just correlated? And that's the problem with research, sussing that out between causation and correlation. But a lot of the gut research actually has been found to be causal. It's not just implicated, but it's the root cause of somebody's mental health issues, because it's in part, it's 75% of the immune system. Inflammation's a product of that immune system. So it makes sense from a core root mechanism that the gut's going to be a more of an upstream root issue there. And then I mentioned hormones, getting an assessment of your hormones. Nutrient deficiencies we know can play a role in neurotransmitter signaling and inflammation and the way the immune system's modulated. So, and let me kind of talk about some people in our space's opinion, which makes sense to me. Well, when you do see a benefit of antidepressants, is it just placebo and the mind over matter? And you're self-regulating your biochemistry because you believe this thing is helping you? Or could the antidepressants act as a mild anti-inflammatory in some people? I tend to think that could be a component of it. And I think more research should be done to substantiate that. And there's merit to that. Is it acting as a mild anti-neuroinflammatory agent? Could be. But my question would be, can we get that lowered inflammation with less potential side effects? And that's where my mind would go to. So I'm not anti, again, people taking antidepressants, do it. But know the research, make the decision for yourself with your doctor, and discuss that with your doctor.
Yeah. And I think if we're going to talk about medications, I think we should also talk about supplementation, because there's a lot of research surrounding that as well. And the effectiveness with these specific disorders or diagnoses. So are there any things that you would lean into from a supplemental standpoint without knowing the root cause? Are there any generalized things that you know that are well-researched in that space?
The thing that most are going to impact most people in the most significant way, and someone that looks at labs for 10 hours a day for 14 years, you see some low-hanging fruits, deficiencies in a lot of people. So the most ubiquitous things that I see, magnesium would be one thing, which most people know. I love a magnesium L-threonate, which the nervous system really loves that form. It passes through the blood-brain barrier. It gets to the brain. So we use a blend called the magnesium here. So you can go to drwillcole.com for all of these. I'll put it in the show notes, but if you also go to shop and the ones that we recommend, we put together a mood support bundle for everybody and you can have at it. The magnesium blend is there. CoQ10 has strong, compelling evidence improving mood. I like different GABAergic. GABA is the anti-anxiety pathway. So people that feel wired and tired, and there's depression, anxiety kind of together. Things like L-taurine, L-theanine, myo-inositol can be helpful here. And then adaptogens like ashwagandha is beneficial. And then there's some basic ones. What we call the essentials are things that I think pretty much everybody should be taking. But vitamin D3, K2, the brain is rich with vitamin D receptor sites. It's associated with improvement of mood when you're optimizing serum vitamin D. We want it to be about 60 to 80 on labs. Getting your levels retested over time, like a few times a year to at least, to look at where your vitamin D levels are at. And sunlight is part of that conversation. There's mood boosting benefits of light therapy independent of vitamin D, but certainly vitamin D is part of that when you're talking about sunlight as far as the mechanism of how it's helping you. Omega-3 fatty acids, there's one study, I don't have it pulled up, but found that after 1 month of consistent use, the participants in the study saw at least 50% of reduction of depressive symptoms, like powerful. But we know omega-3 fatty acid in supplement form gets you therapeutic dosages. That's what's published in the journals, but also just eating healthy fats, like using your food as medicine is so key there. Prioritizing protein, which neurotransmitters need amino acids to properly function. So getting at least 90 grams of whole food, complete proteins throughout the day, the very minimum, if not closer to 100, it's based on your body mass. Looking at healthy fats, 60% of all your body's, 60% of your brain is fat, 25% of cholesterol in the body is in the brain. So not being afraid of these healthy saturated fatty acid bonds, these carbon bonds that you need for healthy cell membrane function and integrity. And yeah, so those are some things that come to mind. And oh, saffron.
I was going to say, yeah. How could you forget?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about saffron today. So this was, let me pull up my notes here.
Because this has been a more frequently talked about supplement. And the research is pretty incredible surrounding it.
Yeah, it's something that we utilize with telehealth patients a lot. We have the saffron that we love at drwillcole.com. We'll have it in the mood support section for you all. And we'll put it in the show notes as well. But saffron, there's at least 24 plus randomized control trials in the journals comparing saffron against placebo and comparing it against Prozac, the antidepressant, and against Lexapro, and Prozac, Lexapro, and Zoloft. And it showed it was at least equally effective, but fewer side effects. So again, and there's so many more benefits to these things. There's also a study that showed improved sleep. The Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine found that taking 14 milligrams of saffron twice daily for 28 days noticeably reduced insomnia by increasing levels of melatonin. So there's this modulating effect, which serotonin is converted into melatonin. So we know serotonin has function, but how is it working, right? And it seems to be a lot of this is modulating the gut, which it works upon the vagus nerve. So really going back to gut and saffron's improvement of the gut microbiome could be the mechanism of action there. There's one study that looked at these two different compounds called anandamide and 2-arachidonyl glycerol. These are derivatives of arachidonic acid that are released after using marijuana, which a lot of people get that mood shifts of marijuana. They're more chilled out, improvement of mood there. But saffron increases these two chemicals without being psychoactive and getting you high. And there's no negative side effects in the brain, which we know that marijuana is associated with that too. It's not addictive as well. So it seems to work upon the endocannabinoid system, the ECS, which is a massive regulator of our mood. So it's interesting. But I think a synergistic effect, not just one magic pill, but a confluence of tools within the toolbox are really supportive of optimal mental health. Most of you know that I've been drinking AG1 for a long time now. It's something that I have every day when I get to the telehealth center. And today, I've got an extra special offer for you all so you can start optimizing your health today. As I said, for years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. It's just one scoop of AG1. You mix it in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel so good. I'm energized throughout the day. I don't get that PM slump of energy. It's supporting my gut health, my immune system, my focus, so many things. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, prebiotics, probiotics, and so much more. It's a powerful, healthy, sustainable habit that's also powerfully simple. Think of AG1 like a multivitamin, multimineral, a green superfood, an adaptogen blend, a functional mushroom blend, a gut health support blend, all in one, in just one scoop. As someone that looks at labs for a living, I can tell you, looking at new telehealth patient labs, nutrient deficiencies are commonplace, but they're not normal. Well, you can fill in the gaps of the most common nutrient deficiencies with just one scoop of AG1. AG1 is not just something that I take, but it's something that I recommend to my family, my friends, and to my telehealth patients. And that's why they've been a partner for so long, since honestly day one of the podcast. They've been a sponsor for years now. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 K2. You get a whole year supply. And for a limited time, you'll get 10 free AG1 travel packs. Again, that's 10 free travel packs and also a year supply of vitamin D3 K2 with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/WillCole. That's drinkag1.com/WillCole. Check it out while this offer lasts. One of the most overlooked and missed things that people don't think about, and it can be the underlying driver of things like headaches, fatigue, low energy, cramps, confusion, brain fog, it's electrolyte imbalances and electrolyte deficiencies. When you fix this, you can really improve all of those things, sometimes entirely, depending on the cause. So something that I recommend to telehealth patients, and I've recommended on the podcast for a long time, is Element. It's the science-backed ratio of these important electrolytes that I take every day. And they come in these delicious flavors. I mean, they come in flavors like citrus and grapefruit. Andrea on my telehealth team, she loves the chocolate one as well. You can have it hot or cold. The evidence suggests that we should shoot for around 4,000 to 6,000 milligrams of sodium, 3,500 to 5,000 milligrams of potassium, and 400 to 600 milligrams of magnesium per day from our food as medicine and supplements. If that sounds like a lot of sodium, consider that athletes can lose up to 7 grams of sodium per day through sweating. Element has your electrolyte needs covered with 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium. It contains enough electrolytes to move the needle towards each of these electrolyte goals. You're also guaranteed to find an Element flavor you love. Try fan favorites, the citrus salt, raspberry salt. Get spicy with the mango chili or mixed chocolate salt that I mentioned into your morning coffee for a mean mocha. So right now, go to drinkelement.com/WillCole. That's DRINKLMNT, drinkelement.com/WillCole to get a free sample pack with any purchase. Check it out.
Yeah, I love that. And obviously, you layered in some food and supplemental. Are there any additional therapies that we see are helpful beyond, before we shift to Candace and we talk about that mind-body connection and the gut in particular? Are there any other therapies that you would recommend for someone, even from an anti-inflammatory standpoint, to help with this?
Yeah, two that have such exciting evidence around it, both anecdotally, like I've noticed improvements, but also in the journals as well. It's sauna therapy and cold plunge, and even the contrasting of that. So both have been shown to improve endorphins, increase euphoric senses, and they both lower inflammation levels too. So how they're helping is probably a synergistic effect. It's not just one thing, but it's releasing these endorphins and lowering inflammation levels. But I'll also put it in the show notes, the infrared sauna that I use personally and the cold plunge that I use personally as well.
I love that. And I think this is an important conversation to have. And I love that we see patients every day. And like Dr. Cole said, we're not anti-medication at all. But what we do want to figure out is, why do you feel like that in the first place?
Yeah. And something that we say ad nauseum here is, what is your most effective option that causes you the least amount of side effects? And for some people, medications are going to be one, are going to fit that criteria. And they're going to be a tool within your toolbox. And there's no shame in that at all. And you may need it for a season of your life to even get your head above water. Or maybe another medication that's not an antidepressant. There's no shame in that at all. But it's just about, what is your most effective option long-term that causes you the least amount of side effects? And that's what we're exploring here. And that's what we want to look at the data, look at the research, and look at labs for you and be your own research, be your own N of one experiment and see these numbers improve in your life. And that's what we get to do on a daily basis with patients. So Candace, what's the mental health side of it? The mental, emotional, spiritual side of it is so profoundly influential. And we're modulating these the biochemistry, just as we're talking about supplements and how it influences our biochemistry. These practices that you're going to talk about also modulate our biochemistry in a positive way, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And the question I ask myself when I hear you talk about all the research and all of the meta studies and all of that is really, well, what standard do I want for myself and my life? Because I think when you bringing this to like a more practical, personal level, when you talk to people day in, day out that have done different interventions, medication for depression, medication for anxiety, even some of the other tools that they're using, the question I always like to ask or look at is like, well, what's the efficacy and are you happy with that result? And I think the answer that you hear, I know that I hear when I work with people is, no, this isn't the result that I'm getting is either it got my head above water or it got me to a certain point, but it is not the end of the story for me, or I'm not getting the result that I want. And I think that we can't, I don't think anyone's saying really that you shouldn't use whatever tools work for you. It's just, it's so odd to me that we are accepting sort of culturally such an abysmal result when we know it's right. Just like, I don't know. So
yeah. Well, isn't it interesting? It's like, yeah, it's not, nobody's questioning it. And there's not a lot of conversations around it because they don't, the conversations aren't convenient to a lot of moving parts.
Which brings me to why. So my perspective on this would be, well, why is it not a convenient conversation? I think it comes down to the human condition of, we all like to avoid pain. And I think we have, just at this level, at this point in our history, such a low emotional IQ. emotional, you know, quotient mm-hmm. to intelligence, that when we have these discussions with our doctors or our peers or our, you know, even mental health professionals, there's sort of just a numbness or a daftness or a disconnect, because we're disconnected from what makes us essentially human. So when I look at like the root core of like what drives this from that mental health spiritual side, it really is a fundamental function of just not having that connection to the essence of what makes us human, and understanding that just being naturally pain averse or pleasure seeking is just a natural part of our function. And we need to learn to work with that, as opposed to, I guess, really just ignoring it is what I see. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would you say? I mean, I thought of the one way in the molecular psychiatry report, how it, let me find this, the belief shapes how people understand their moods, leading to a pessimistic outlook of on the outcome of depression and negative experience and the possibility of self-regulation of mood.
Right.
Like, it seems like what's not within our control. Like,
right.
This is a chemical imbalance. I'm inherently broken.
Yes. Yeah. And I've done what I can do. I'm taking the pill. What else do you want from me? So there are individuals that definitely feel that way. And then there's a large sect of other individuals, and I would be in this category, where I've used these interventions at times in my life, and what I found was I needed it, but I also recognized for me, when I was on an SSRI, it had a sort of a numbing effect. And so I could recognize that while I felt a little more stable, I also could sense that my progress personally was halted, because I couldn't access emotion in the same way in order to deal with it and process it. Mm-hmm. So I elected to bring in other things to sort of bring that to the surface or work with it, you know, and everyone's going to be a little bit different. So to get to the practical answer to your question that I think you were asking me is like, well, how do we approach this? What do we do? It's layered. Just like in the rest of functional medicine, when we talk about supplementation and we talk about nutrition and we talk about understanding our labs, you know, the mental health recommendation I'm always going to make is that you have to go top down and you have to go bottom up. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at some somatic practices that help your body process in the moment what you're experiencing in emotions. You have to almost build up that resiliency from the body level. Mm-hmm. So that can be different. It's so easy and practical, this stuff, but it's as easy as some of the like progressive muscle relaxation. You can go deeper with different somatic practices and find a practitioner that'll like help fine tune for you ways that you can release this emotion from your body.
So when you say somatic, for people that are hear that but don't know exactly what are examples of that,
what are
some examples of somatic practices?
Somatic, when we use that word, it really means like in the body. So you're dealing with just the body response to mm-hmm. the stress. Are you ready? Andrea, are you? Andrea's doing a somatic practice.
Yes,
she's
she
doing
was.
A great exam.
That's
she's Andrea's waving over
her.
Here and I didn't see it. But yeah, just like movement can be a really good somatic practice. Understanding your breath connection. People that even do like group drumming, that's mm-hmm. a somatic practice, because you're using your body to basically facilitate emotional mm-hmm. release.
And tapping, right?
Tapping is another one, yeah.
And that would be like tapping parts of your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
To make yourself feel
on
grounded.
The meridians, yeah. And so there's so much if you want to go into that approach. And I would say if you're somebody that hasn't been having effective results with just therapy or a medication, this might be the place to start to lean into, because essentially what it helps you do is it helps you contain and release emotion. And that's basically that emotional illiteracy that I see mm-hmm. rampant. This is a tool that helps you connect and understand how to process it. And then the top-down therapies, something like cognitive behavioral therapy, helps you do the same thing, which is basically process and understand emotion, but you're doing it from the cognitive side or from your thought standpoint. So being able to observe your thoughts, understand their impact, actually work with playing and changing mm-hmm. what you're thinking. That's when I say top down.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. And then bottom up, you're doing some of the somatic practices. Craniosacral work, any of those body work, Reiki, that can really be very gentle somatic practices that someone can lean
into.
That's
beautiful. So when you use the phrase there, and I never heard someone say it like that, contain and release thoughts.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful way of thinking it. So you're saying you're seeing what they are. Well, it's like this is a mindfulness concept, right? Of just like realizing you're not your thoughts and emotions,
right?
But the observing presence of them. Mm-hmm. And then I think of the way you said it, contain and release, that somehow our ancestors knew this. Like in the Bible, it talks about taking your thoughts captive. Like they didn't know the mechanisms of action per se when they wrote that.
Right.
But it's somehow, it's a mindfulness practice of realizing your thoughts are not you and release them, allow them to pass through you, which is a mindfulness concept.
And the science behind that is that the practice of doing that actually changes the way your brain functions. You actually create new neural connections. You actually change your brain just in the process of being able to understand that you aren't your thoughts. The mind is just another piece of you that is, you know, connecting. I guess connecting is not the right word, but translating your being or your existence. It's not you. It's not the totality of you any more than your body is.
Right. Yeah. That's powerful. One of the top things that we see with telehealth patients are hormonal imbalances and different inflammatory problems and nutrient deficiencies. And one of the common symptoms when you're talking about a combination of inflammation, hormone dysregulation, or deficiencies in the body, it can cause problems with our hair. A tool that I love in the toolbox for our telehealth patients to support their hair health from the outside in is Vegamore. Write that down if you're not driving. Vegamore, spelled V-E-G-A-M-O-U-R. If you're consistent with these products from Vegamore, you're going to see such amazing change in your hair health. Vegamore products are 100% cruelty-free and are never formulated with potentially harmful chemicals like parabens or hormones. When it comes to seeing results, again, the key is consistency. When you make it a part of your daily routine, you're going to be happy the way your hair looks and feels. For the best results, use for a minimum of 3 months for visibly fuller, healthier, and thicker looking hair. What I also recommend is checking out their monthly subscription of their Grow Serum, the Grow Hair Serum, spelled G-R-O. When you get the monthly subscription, it makes it easy to stay consistent. When you sign up for a monthly subscription, you can get one bottle or three bottles sent. Plus, you can save more money and you never run low on products that you need to take great care of your hair. Fun fact, Vegamore sells one bottle of the Grow Hair Serum every 15 seconds on their website. That's how great this stuff is. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. For a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/willcole. Use code willcole at checkout. That's vegamore.com/willcole. Code WILLCOLE to save 20% off your first order. VEGAMOUR.com/WILLCOLE. Code WILLCOLE.
Hi guys, it's Jordan from the Balanced Blonde Soul on Fire podcast. On my show, we go deep on all things astrology, awakening, motherhood, channeling, healing, and so much more. A few years ago, I was diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease, and the healing journey I embarked on at that time set me on the path to radical awakening. Let's just say I had no choice but to change my energy, and that opened me up to the most beautiful healing of my life. On my show, you can expect to feel like you're sitting in my living room chatting with old friends. Tune in every Wednesday to connect and hang on the Balanced Blonde Soul on Fire.
So, any other thoughts on this topic that we didn't cover?
I have a few resources I would mention. Yeah. I think that one of the great, it's a friend of ours, Dr. Nicole LaPera. Her work, How to Do the Work, I think is a beautiful, succinct piece of writing that really will walk you through. And then she has all kinds of other resources as well. But there's one just really interesting anecdotal study that she talks about in the book. And I wonder if you guys are familiar with this. They took participants, and these were elderly individuals, so 70s, I think they were in the 70s. And they put them in an environment where it was a total reflection of their life when they were in their 20s. So, and like they put like newspapers and magazines from that time period, and all the pictures in their environment was of them in their 20s and all of these things. So she goes through and she talks about this study, and the participants, just after a few short period of time, like weeks, I think it was 6 weeks, they had increases in their cognitive function, flexibility, just from living and existing in the environment. And what they told the participants was, they said, just act as if you were 20 again, just embody being that. And they saw real shifts all across the board. But here's the most interesting thing that I found about this study was that when people looked at a picture of this individual that was in their 70s that day, they rated them like they were like, how old does this person look? They scaled them 2 or 3 years younger in the moment than what they would have with the control picture. Wow. Does it make sense? So over a period of 6 weeks. So that's the piece of this that even the medical, I don't want to say the medical community, the pharmaceutical community, I think putting that study where it says, you know, the way we approach looking at our ability to change is the most fundamental piece here. And just recognizing that we know on a human level that we can change our lives just by changing our outlook. Yeah. I don't know why fully we don't want to approach it. I think it has to do with our aversion to pain and change.
Mm-hmm. I would 100% agree, Candace. Yeah. I mean, we have patients sometimes, and you guys have seen the applications, and they've tried 12 to 20 different medications in their lifetime. Yeah. They're seeking, but it can feel really overwhelming. And I think partially, a lot of people are told, oh, it's in your head. So we're helping connect the mind-body connection, there can be something very real physiologically going on, but that doesn't mean you can't put in the mental and emotional work in the meantime too.
Yeah.
Because what you've experienced can shape how you think about yourself. And so I think it's really important that the people who are listening understand that we are not saying you're making it up, it's all in your head.
Right.
That this is there. That's why we started with the physical component of this, that there are very real physiological things happening, but your mind is important, and how you view your healing is important. And the somatic practices and the thought capturing that you talked about helps you overcome that hurdle of feeling out of control.
Yeah.
And we're giving you back control, if anything.
Well, and the whole, this is the last thing I'll really say about this, but the whole thing of it's in your head as being a bad thing. I think that's such an interesting thing too, because we all connotate it that way. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's all in your head. And like, I'm not diminishing that gaslighting effect, but that's actually a really great thing that a lot of this is in our head.
Yes.
Thank God for the placebo effect. I think about that all the time. Like, when I really, when I was in my early 20s, went on an antidepressant, there were times in the past, I'm like, thank goodness I've had the ability to think this is going to help me.
Yeah. Yes.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Right. And so can you do that? Can you have this effect of mind over matter, plus deal with inflammation, deal with the gut, all that stuff in concert with no side effects? Like, can we find that path?
Yeah.
Where we can get these maximum benefits without potential side effects. So that's what this is an exploration of.
Yeah.
What that is. I had someone tell me.
We see that every day.
We see it every day. I had someone tell me in the comment section when I posted that controversial Instagram post, they said, this is very, she wasn't triggered in that way where she was, you know, saying how what a horrible human and how irresponsible I was for talking about research, is that I'm curious about this. For me, I feel better mental health wise when I just have the antidepressants in my cabinet. So I thought there was something beautiful about that she was introspective enough to know for her, it wasn't necessarily the taking it that helped her. She felt better with just it in her house.
Because she had something in her arsenal that she felt could help her get her head above water when she needed it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what that was.
Yeah. Something I didn't mention, which all the things we talked about as far as tools or things you, of course, talk with your doctor about. If you're on medications, do not come off of any medications. No. Be safe and responsible here. But curiosity to learn more. You could do all of these on your own or work with us as part of this with labs, et cetera, to see what's right for you. But I want to say something that you do not want to do on your own. It's psychedelics. Let me just say this. There are people that do psychedelics on their own, but I would not advise this. But there's a study in Nature 2023. It was titled MDMA-assisted therapy for moderate to severe PTSD. This is a randomized placebo-controlled phase 3 trial.
Yeah.
Kind of the gold standard in scientific literature. They found that MDMA for PTSD cured 70% of people. That blows everything out of the water. For people that have PTSD. Similar research with psilocybin mushrooms.
For those research, for that too, because I've heard you talk about this before and I think that's amazing. Those were accompanied with a certain amount of hours of therapy in conjunction,
correct?
Normally
there's integration involved with it, but they stand on their own even without therapy.
It's working with the nervous system. It's creating a point of reset, which other practices do too. So again, this is, you can layer all of these things in a safe way. And to your point too, absolutely. I think working with a practitioner, if you're going to choose that route, is so imperative. But I would say that for almost any of these modalities that you choose, you know, you can of course go find an online somatic practice course, or, you know, but there's really no substitute for the human component of being with someone, having them witness your journey, having them give insight mm-hmm. to you, having the opportunity for you to be able to share what your goals and what you want, because that's really what it's all about too.
Yeah.
Like, just as a one more reminder, you know, if you're going into a therapeutic practice, it is never so the practitioner can tell you what's wrong with you and here's what you need to do to fix it. Mm-hmm. It is the actual opposite. It's this is what I'm experiencing. This is what I would like to experience.
Yeah. That's a key differentiation.
Yeah. And we flip it when we go into a medical doctor's office, it's completely the reverse, right?
Yeah.
So that's the mode we get into. It's totally the opposite.
100%. Great conversation. I hope this was enlightening for people. Share it with friends and family, honestly, because I really feel like this information can improve a lot of people's lives and give them hope, give them answers, spark curiosity and thought around this hot button topic. Before we go, you're going to get a special conversation that I have with one of our telehealth patients. But if you want to learn more about all the work we talked about, go to drwillcole.com. We'll see you next time. Chelsea, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful to be here.
Before we started recording, you told me how you were the ultimate Art of Being Well listener this morning.
Oh, yeah.
What did it look like? What did your morning look like?
Oh, I'm drinking my element in my water. I was sipping on my peak Sun Goddess matcha tea. I was, you know, a little bit nervous about doing this. I was in my backyard. I took off my socks. I was doing some grounding in the grass. I was using my summer Friday. I forgot to mention my summer Friday's lip balm. And I was listening to a Brio P. So yeah, I think I checked like all of the Art of Being Well listener boxes.
That's so funny.
I know I forgot something. Oh, I'm wearing my Apollo Neuro.
Oh my gosh. Hey. I love it. I love it. I'm telling you, you know this as a telehealth patient. The things that we talk about in the podcast, I recommend to telehealth patients. So it's
yeah,
like, 100%. It's not like just a pod thing. It's something that I use in my own life and all the things you said. That's so funny. All right. So since you are a grade A student, you know, let's talk about where you were when we met, like what you were going through. Let's start there and walk through your journey together.
Okay. Yeah. I had honestly been on my wellness journey for quite a while. My entire life, I had struggled with, gaining weight easily and, you know, having a hard time losing it, just like a perpetual, what I used to think was like a yo-yo dieter. But now that I know more, I know that it was much more involved than that. I had been suffering from migraine for about 14 years. When I got pregnant with my son was when those came on. I had recently been diagnosed with ADHD. So I got my diagnosed when I was 35. So looking back now over my life, it really does, you know, explain a lot. And more recently, I had quit drinking. I have been alcohol free for almost 5 years. And I was doing all of the, you know, all of the things that I could to help myself. I go to therapy regularly. I go to the chiropractor. I have an amazing acupuncturist. But there was just something, you know, missing. And I found your podcast in August of 21. And I just like quickly started like listening, you know, multiple a day. I've listened to a lot of them more than once. And I just, you know, like you say, test it, don't guess it. And so I was at the place where I had really been dealing with migraine, possible Raynaud's syndrome, where my hands would get really, really cold, and heart palpitations, anxiety, like always being in fight or flight or freeze. Tired with low energy. Yeah. So I just decided to reach out and start digging in and figuring out what's really going on.
Yeah. So we ran labs and we go over a lot of stuff on the labs, and that can be overwhelming. And I'm always trying to balance that out to show people, okay, the body's interconnected, right? You don't have to know all the details. And some people don't want to know all the details. They just want us to lead the way and kind of design the protocol based on the labs. Most people want to know something. They want to know like the overarching look of it. Some people want to get really detailed, so much of it is kind of knowing what the patients, what they need from an empowerment standpoint to encourage them on this journey. What was that like for you? I mean, was it a lot? I didn't obviously ask you, but on this side of the journey, like what was that initial lab visit like?
Yeah, it was completely overwhelming, if I'm going to be honest. But also really great to know that we found stuff that was like really, you know, fixable. Mm-hmm. I didn't come back with any like really huge diagnoses. So it was overwhelming in the sense that, you know, just like, where do we go from here? But mm-hmm. you guys have been so amazing holding my hand on that part of the journey.
What for you was part of the process, like there's biohacking aspects of protocols, there's supplement, there's mind-body practices, you mentioned somatic, vagal, nerve retraining, and there's food components to it, right? And everybody's food protocol is different. There's the science and art of it, and there's different paths even with the same person too. Sometimes we have to be pragmatists and do plan B because plan B is meeting the patient where they're at. And we want this to be realistic and sustainable and not a source of dread or obsession or, you know, it possible like on a mental, emotional level for them to do. And there's an art part. Sometimes we start with plan A and have to go to plan B because we see how the person's it's manifesting in their life as we're coaching them and guiding them. For you, and let me say the other caveat too, is that we have patients that are completely plant-based when we meet them and they stay plant-based. And we just optimize it and tweak and adjust it, whether it's foods to focus on or macronutrient changes or, you know, things like that. And then we have all the patients really carnivore adjacent, and then everything in between. So to be clear here, there's a lot of bioindividuality with these topics. And sometimes there's plan A options and plan B when we're building food protocols. For you, when we met, you were a vegetarian. How long were you a vegetarian?
Yeah, I became a vegetarian when I was 10. So 30 years. Yeah.
Okay. So 30 years, vegetarian, 10 years old. What made you go vegetarian at 10 years old?
So my dad's also vegetarian. And so it was kind of something fun to do with him. I also was very into, I guess, activism as much as you could be, you know, as a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And, you know, just my love of animals and not wanting to eat. Animal protein was what made me start.
Okay. And then I have these individual conversations when I'm meeting people as we're designing protocols for them. And some people tell me, no, I am not willing to bring any animal foods in. And they do great. I mean, there's no way. And then sometimes they say, I'm not willing to bring any animal foods in, like non-vegan and vegetarian foods. And it comes to the point where we have to make some compromise on things based on how fast or how slowly things are going for them. For you, we broached that topic on what do you think of bringing some things, and maybe we land in pescatarian land, right? And we bring in some wild caught fish, still predominantly plant-based. Sometimes we bring in, you know, grass-fed beef or bone broth, these topics that are so personal and individual as far as what the person's ready or willing or wanting to do. What was that conversation like on your end on this side of the journey?
Yeah, I actually came to you guys ready to introduce animal protein. I had read Gut Feelings and just going through and seeing like what, you know, possible elimination diet would look like and how the majority of my diet was highly, highly inflammatory foods or potentially inflammatory foods. And so that was another reason that I reached out to you guys was because I had started, I don't know, the universe kept sending all of these like former vegetarians my way, like my therapist and my acupuncturist. And then when I had found you, and I know that you were a vegetarian vegan for so many years. And so I came with an open mind. I'd started taking the Paleo Valley Organ.
Yeah.
Next. I'm sorry. I'm sure that there's the proper term for it.
Yeah. The organ meat complex.
Organ meat complex. And so that's how I had actually started. I mean, I went from not having any meat to doing the capsules. And then I had eaten like a little bit of animal protein before I reached out to you guys, but there was no way that I was going to be able to do this in a way that was like, it was just really, really overwhelming. So the fact that you guys just took me and like actually just said like, this is what you're going to do. And this is what you're going to eat. And you're going to start with bone broth and, you know, adding collagen. And, you know, you guys really did help me gently start to add animal protein without it being, you know, super intimidating. I mean, I don't even know how to cook it. Like, my husband's not a vegetarian. And so he just always ate vegetarian for years because I just didn't cook meat. And so, you know, it's having to change so many things about my life, like learning how to cook meat. And my kids always give me such a bad time when we go out to eat. I really am not ready to have my meat too rare. And so I always order it like medium to medium well. And the servers always like try to convince me no, you should really order this like rare medium. And so I always have to say like, oh, well, I've been a vegetarian for 30 years and I'm just starting to eat meat. So I want it more done. And they just give me the worst time about that. They're so scared of me hearing me say that.
Yeah. Hey, I'm right there with you. There's certain things where I just have to have it a certain way. I think it is like a psychological thing with some of us. All right. So what was that process like for your family, and not just your immediate family, but your like extended family that's known you since you were 10 years old and being vegetarian? What did people think when they learned that you weren't anymore?
People don't believe me. Like my husband's aunt, we were just, together for the Super Bowl, and I was eating some, I don't know, like tri-tip or something. And she just stood there with her mouth open. Like people are just not used to seeing me eat meat. And it's weird that it's such a big deal, but I was the only, besides my dad, I was the only vegetarian in my family, and that was another part of it too. It was kind of like this thing that it was a part of my identity. It was like, I am a vegetarian. And so like really, deciding that my health is the most important thing. And for me, adding animal protein was going to be the thing that was going to help me heal. Then it was worth it to me to explore that. Yeah.
Yeah. I thank you for sharing that. And just again, repeat for people, like there are different paths for different people. And that's what this whole show is about. And there are some people that do great and thrive on a well-formulated, thoughtful, plant-based diet, right? And there's ways around it. There's supplementation. And there's certain people's constitutions and where they're at, their gut health resilience, for example, that it is fine. Their labs are fine. They feel fine. That's their preference. So let me just be clear on that. We're meeting people that have things to repair and gain resilience and optimize their health. And I will say also too, when you're looking at a standard plant-based diet, even if it's whole food based and all that stuff, like it's a good quality, relatively good quality plant-based diet, it's certainly, no one's going to debate here that it's better than the standard American diet. And I think what we're talking about here is there's a difference between better and optimal. And for you, you were doing more than most people were for their health. And we were just trying to take it to the next level. So it's sometimes relative, and we're not making blanket statements about this stuff. So for you, like, was that the food part the hardest part? What do you think of the supplement protocol? Was that weird or overwhelming for you?
Yeah, the supplement protocol was definitely very overwhelming at first, but I met with Megan and she literally made me a daily, like, or like hourly, like, this is when you're going to take this and this, and not that I'm taking things hourly, but just to kind of help me navigate it throughout my day. And like, you're going to take your binder in the morning and then you're going to take your drops. And then you're after lunch, you can take your supplements and, cause it is a lot. At first it was very, very overwhelming. Then it just kind of became a part of my routine and my every day. And now I don't have to think twice about it.
Yeah. It's sometimes a thing to get it off the ground, but it becomes intuitive. Yeah. And our goal for everybody is to start cutting supplements as we're fixing things and using food as medicine primarily. All right. So now, like, where are you at now? Like, you're at in your life now, and healing is nonlinear. None of us are arrived, right? But comparing yourself now versus then, what's your life like?
Oh my gosh. So much different. I definitely have like a bigger cup. I can just handle more. My nervous system just feels more regulated. I'm able to really like listen to my body now. I remember when you came out with intuitive fasting, I was like, there's no such thing as intuitive for me. Like if I were to do anything intuitively, I would be eating all day long because I was so hungry. I was always hungry. I think that my blood sugar was just so unregulated that I was constantly starving. And that was one of the reasons that I decided to incorporate animal protein, was because I just needed more protein. I needed to help balance out my blood sugar. And for me, that's what, I found really, really worked. Yeah. So being able to listen to my body, and one of the best side effects has been weight loss. I remember thinking it was really strange that you guys didn't ask me how much I weighed like on the initial intake forms. Cause I'm like, I've got weight loss resistance, and you guys really made me look at as my inability to lose weight and how easily I gain weight is like a symptom and not like the main issue. And so that was, I think, the biggest surprise for me. So I've lost in the last 7 months, I've lost about 40 pounds, a little over 40. And it has just been like a nice side effect, but it was never the goal mm-hmm. for the first time in my life. It was never the goal it's always been to lose weight. And this time around, I just wanted to heal.
Yes. Amen. I love that. I mean, that's powerful. And it's funny that, you know, we did ask you and, you know, it's not a main metric, right? It's, we mm-hmm. want it to be a natural byproduct of healing, right? And it's exactly yeah. what you said. Where it's like, and hyper-focusing on it isn't healthy from a mental health standpoint too. And you can, that stress and obsession isn't great. So it'll happen, but let's focus great. On healing and feeling great and wonderful. I'm so proud of you. So what's the next phase of your journey? Where do you want to go from here? Or do you feel like, you know what, I'm at peace and let's just support this?
Yeah, I've definitely been very slow in this process. So I'm actually just doing my blood work and just sent back my labs to get retested for things. So yeah, I think the next part of the journey is to start, you know, reintroducing some of the foods that I've cut out. Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to starting like strength training and, you know, really just taking my health to a whole new level. Like I feel so much better. I still need to work on really getting my migraines under control. That's the one thing that there's just so many triggers for those that, mm-hmm. you know, like if I don't get enough sleep or if I'm on my cycle or if, you know, the storm comes in, you know, but being able to really look at my food and have the ability to like really be able to tell like what foods trigger me has mm-hmm. been really helpful. But I still feel like I have a little bit of healing to go in that department.
Yeah. Yeah. And without going into detail, like there are obviously things that we're going to continue to address. And I have no doubt whatsoever that as we get dig even deeper and deal with these facets, you're going to achieve those goals as well. Great job.
Thank you. Couldn't have done it without you guys.
Thank you. Anything you want to tell someone that's on the other side of impossible that feels like, man, like what can I do? Like I feel completely at a loss for what the next step is.
I would definitely recommend to get tested, like run the labs, you know, like I had found intermittent fasting before I started working with you guys. And I thought that was like the holy grail and, you know, slowly the weight crept back up and then to look at my labs and see that like my leptin was through the roof and really just knowing what is going on inside of your body, not guessing, but actually just getting tested and really looking at the numbers and asking for help. And also, I know it sounds kind of silly, but one of the things that kept me from reaching out to you guys for so long was like, I didn't feel like I was like sick enough mm-hmm. because I didn't have like a full blown autoimmune, you know, disorder. I have, you know, migraine, I get, you know, anywhere from 2 to 8 a month, but like, I'm so used to that, you know, I've had that for 14 years. So it's just my normal.
Yeah.
But just, you know, realizing that you are worth the effort and time and just knowing that you're worthy of living like a life that is beautiful and amazing and magical and like you can thrive and that you're worthy of that and really reaching out and asking for help and getting it.
Wow. That's powerful. And you know, I hear that actually so much, I think, and I've never had a patient on the podcast verbalize it like that, but I hear it offline is that they will say that to me, whereas they have things to optimize. They're not living their best life. They're not vibrating on a higher level and they know they could, or they used to, but they count themselves out and like almost gaslight themselves. It's not that bad. They'll compare themselves to maybe someone sicker that they know or someone that we've talked about on the case, on the podcast, and they'll think it's not for them. And and you said it so eloquently that it was just your normal, but it's not, it's just common for you. It's not normal to have these issues. So, it's not just that, you know, it's not just the migraine. Let's do something about it. It's not just weight loss resistance. These are worthy of looking into and addressing. So thank you for highlighting that. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right, my friend. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Let's get this labs retested.
I know. I'm in the process. I just sent them off in the mail yesterday.
So. All right. Thank you so much for coming on this on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.
Note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.